Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Patreon-only episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my buddy, Brian Hooper. You can follow him on Twitter at Brick75. You probably know him. He's been on this program before. He is a stone-cold great DFS player, of course. We didn't talk at all about DFS here on this show. Instead, we talked about Bitcoin toxicity, Bitcoin maximalism, and its role that it's had in a lot of the unkind things people are saying about Bitcoin these days, and then also a wider discussion about how crypto fits in with governance and the possibility of an actual crypto governance token working in the real world, of which Brian has written up a proposal on his website. So hope you guys enjoy the show. I always enjoy talking to Brian. If you want to get bonus episodes of the show, you can sign up on patreon.com/takecast, or you can just leave a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone. Welcoming Brian Hooper at Brick75 back to the show. You guys know him from the top of all your leaderboards and lols and trying to copy Osmo's tweets. We're sitting here on December 23rd. It's right before Christmas. We're getting into the holiday season, and the NFL is a mess right now. Brian was just telling me before the show that a Turkish center by the name of Omar Yurt7 was not in our projections at Daily Roto, so we got to get that fixed. So that's where we are, like, in life right now.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? I'm telling you, you got to get Omar Yurt7 in your projections, guys. It's important.
And that it really is his name. I really thought you were trolling me for a second, and I Googled him, and he's a real guy who's really getting minutes.
No, it's true. I'm like, why have this error in here?
So what I want to start here today, and we got plenty we can talk about all the time, but because I think you will sympathize with me on this. Mm-hmm. Why are Bitcoiners such losers now? Why are these people who were at the forefront of this radical technology, this huge change in how we view money and how we interact with governance? Why are these people such giant fucking losers, crybabies? Like, what has happened? Why is this happening?
I do agree with you. Is it because when something goes mainstream, that's always what happens? Is that possibly it?
I mean, certainly, I think that is probably related. I also think, and I've saw, this is not my point, I saw someone else make this, that the loudest voices in social media are often rewarded. So these people who say, I only eat steak, I only buy things in Bitcoin, I would never use Ethereum, buying a JPEG, right-click saving a JPEG, like these people get rewarded from these horrible viewpoints. And which is not, by the way, I'm not coming here as like an ETH maxi saying like, dude, it's the future of money, you got to do everything on ETH layer one. Like, I think the ETH maxis are just as obnoxious. And it's not anything that ever appealed to me about crypto in the first place. Like, the cool stuff about crypto was like the ideas it represented and doing things in a decentralized way. And it's just like, these people have so much lost their way.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm not sure we want to go down this road this early, but that is like when I was reading all the City Coin, Miami Coin, and all the stuff like that, I'm like, this is like almost antithetical to like the early ideas of Bitcoin. Like what's going on here?
100%. And I mean, the most antithetical stuff is the people who are, you know, begging Gary Gensler to tax the Ethereum gains, like securities gains, and make, you know, Ethereum illegal. Like literally imagine being a Bitcoiner who's like asking Gary Gensler to do anything for you.
It's completely crazy. They've lost their minds, all of them.
And you know, it's so hard to like, it's hard to engage in like such active criticism of Bitcoin as a whole, because obviously, you know, people who don't know anything, then they get the wrong idea. Then they're like, the people who run Bitcoin have lost their mind. And then you're like, well, you know, no one really runs Bitcoin. And the thing that I think really triggers people the most is how much development and business is actually taking place with Ethereum. Like, I think that actually really triggers the maxis. Like they seem to really not like that VCs are so involved with Ethereum, but like the political beliefs of most of these maxis, they should be saying, this is what should be happening in an ideal world. You should be taking advantage of all of these opportunities. You should be, you know, any unregulated opportunity you should be taking.
Definitely, yeah. And calling for regulation, that's just so so far from where the whole thing started. That just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you know, the guy you used to have on the podcast, Safadine, right? I think it was his name.
Well, don't say I used. He came on the show one time. And look, I still tell people to read his book. I honestly do. I still tell people to read his book, despite the fact that, you know, I don't think I would enjoy sitting down at a dinner with the guy.
It was the Bitcoin Standard.
Yeah. And he's written another book too that is probably good, to be honest with you. It's probably, I haven't read it yet, but it's probably good.
Yeah, he seems like a smart guy and everything. But I did listen to a pod the other day that he was on, and he was doing the exact same thing where, you know, Ethereum is just a scam essentially. And you should just convert anything.
But libertarians shouldn't care. Libertarians should believe that anyone who gets scammed got what was coming to them, and that you should be free to scam anyone you'd like.
Oh yeah. I guess I don't think that's like, it just means that, you know, they shouldn't go to jail essentially. You could still look down on that behavior. Like free drugs, for example, it doesn't mean like you want people to be heroin addicts. It just means the trade-offs for government intervention are way worse than actually making it legal. It doesn't mean you want someone you love to be a drug addict or something, you know?
Right. You don't want it, but the libertarian viewpoint is that the only thing preventing you from being scammed is yourself, and you should be free to be scammed by anyone who wants to scam you. And the societal pressure to not be scammed should be enough.
I don't think that's the libertarian principle. You could still if someone scammed you out of a car deal or something, in a libertarian world, you'd still have recourse there, like through arbitration or clawing, you know, trying to claw back some of that.
But who is the arbiter?
You both parties would agree.
But no, that would never happen in the real world. You would never, if someone scammed you, they would scam you and they would get the rewards.
Right. This is all purely on paper in a philosophy class discussion or something. Yeah. But no, that is the argument, is that the arbitrators would have to be both agreed to, you know, and if you didn't abide by the ruling of the judge, then, you know, you'd have some sort of like credit score, and, you know, then other judges and other firms won't do business with you, things like that.
So, I mean, that we can get into all of that stuff a little bit later. We have plenty of time to get there, but I mostly just wanted to, cause you have, I think, a good perspective on this, because you have been in and around the world of Bitcoin for long enough. I mean, what is, you know, kind of the future of the Bitcoin community as it exists, if these people are going to be, you know, it is kind of a toxic community. It is kind of a community that is not welcoming of onboarding people.
Yeah. So you were talking when we got cut off there briefly.
Yeah. I was talking about, you know, it's now the online Bitcoin community is so unwelcoming to new people. And, you know, frankly, if we're going to be honest, much of the interest for people getting onboarded in crypto for the first time is gains, right? And the Bitcoin gains train, it's much harder to tell someone, oh, it's going to a million or whatever, than it is to be like, oh, if you buy this cute picture of a cat, you can make 5x your money in a week. And I just feel like it's sort of the responsibility of, like, you know, crypto people to be much more open-minded and willing to converse and teach than, because that's how it was 5 years ago. You talk to anyone about Bitcoin and they would, you know, it'd be like a religious person, like, telling you about their Lord and Savior. Now the conversations are not like that.
It's completely changed. Yeah. Like a big paradigm shift. Do you think that is why, like, this interest in Miami Coin, where they've raised, like, according to that Mayor Suarez in Miami, they've raised like $30 million in 3 months. Do you think it's just pure speculation? Like, they don't really care about the idea of, like, this form of governance through crypto. They just want
to. No one but real crypto nerds cares about governance tokens or real government nerds, one of the two.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, right? Like, I mean, if we think like we did, whatever, 5 years ago, like, these are the ideas that I'm interested in. It's like, okay, now what can we do with this? Now that we have all this money behind it and all this interest behind it, how can we interact with the real world?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all on board with the idea of governance tokens, which eventually you will read Radical Markets and by Glenn Whale and his partner, which is the most libertarian ideology I could ever see myself embracing, which is that, you know, essentially voting is done through a currency. Every person is allocated, you know, set amount of votes or a set amount of currency, and they can save them or spend them or buy them or sell them for whatever they want to do. Which, you know, it's the reason why that's a hard conversation to have is, as our world exists right now, if we want to do an actual real world problem solve instead of, you know, a philosophy class argument. So the philosophy class argument is, oh, well, that's a great idea because the most popular ideas will actually get through. And then you take that to the real world and you're like, well, Jeff Bezos and Tim Cook and the Google people will just buy whatever votes necessary to get whatever they want. And then we end up living in a more hellish dystopia than the one we already live in.
I would say it's even, you're even one step past where it even go, because the real world application is like, ask the current gatekeepers in the current system to implement it, which is never going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Sure. That's always the biggest problem. So like we were kind of joking, or at least you were laughing at these anarchist, you know, libertarian solutions to arbitration and stuff. It's like, well, that is just pure philosophy class discussion, right? It's like never going to get to that point. All these crypto, a lot of these crypto solutions too, it's like, it's never going to happen. What means do we have to get meaningful crypto change? Right. Like typical voting. Okay. Good luck. Right. That's not going to help you. Donating to your favorite politician. Okay. Yeah. Great. I'm sure that 2,500 is really going to change the game. You know what I mean? Like, through these typical, or having such a big following that you change hearts and minds, right? Something like that. Like, even that probably wouldn't even work. Right. So it's like, okay, well then what can we do? What do we just sit here? Do we just sit here and go and then do a podcast every 4 months? Like, did you see this new regulation they came on? They want miners to know KYC their every transaction. This isn't, you know what I mean? Just rinse.
Well, I mean, crypto becoming a lobby is probably something that could actually happen that is useful, that could create change in the world, that, you know, could, like, crypto having enough money to become a powerful lobby is how crypto enters the 21st century and enters the political arena and becomes a force to be reckoned with. And by the way, the governance tokens thing could matter because you could govern a lobby via, you know, via tokenance governing or via
a DAO. DAO or whatever. That's why this stuff's so cool, because, okay, remember the Poker Players Alliance, right? The big push to get poker legalized after it was the banks were made so they can't do transactions. that just got taken over by PokerStars. Like anyone who was in, you know, in the know knew that like it was a PokerStars vehicle. And so like that caused a lot of problems because the local casinos didn't want an outside non-American company getting their share of clients. And so it just completely killed the legislation in almost every state. So instead of helping us, the poker players, it ended up hurting us. But if you could do it in some decentralized format, and it's really, it's definitely possible. Someone's going to do one of these ideas.
Someone will set up a DAO that does something that changes the world, whether it be, you know, buying the Knicks, which like you kind of laugh about, but there is enough money in crypto to do that. There is enough money in crypto to buy a professional sports team in North America. And if that actually was successfully governed by a DAO, that would change the world forever, which like feels like such a drastic overreaction, but that is like the beginning to changing how people interact with larger bodies that govern our lives.
Yeah. Someone's got to take that first step, and it's probably not going to be in government. So it could definitely be a team. I'm thinking like the Packers, right? The fundraising they do for like their stadium, and then people say they're Packers shareholders when really they're just helping fund the stadium. They don't make any decisions, but something along those lines, maybe.
Yeah. So let's outline your city coin idea that you wrote up.
Okay. So Miami coin, for not everyone's as big a nerd as we are. So Miami coin is based off this city coin idea. So they have it. And like, I know of New York City's got one going and Miami's got one, but I think there's others. And it's pretty simple where through the mining process, 30% of the fees are sent to a separate account that's managed by the city's treasury. And so this fund's building up, you know, over time through all these transactions. And then their idea is to then use that money. He doesn't really have like a written out plan. So it's discretionary essentially, to like give people like parking meter discounts or use it to, who knows, you know, build a park or something like that. And they're just using all the funds for, you know, who knows what.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, this is stupid. Like, why not just, if you really want to give your city money, just cut them a check, right? Like, why would this have anything to do with Bitcoin at all? Like if you really want, you know, them to have, you know, extra money. And so you have no guarantees, right? With this, there's no like agreed upon contract. And like in a worst case scenario, I write in the article, is like they could use those funds against you, right? To like tax crypto and then hire more lawyers to look into people's accounts and track people down. It's like,
sure,
you could be like funding your own impression. Like who knows? Like, so like there's no accountability, right? There's no consequences if they don't use it the way you want to use it. And just this kind of general thing we've been doing in the first, whatever, 15 minutes here of like, okay, how do we get out of the philosophy class and interact with the real world? Because at some point, like this is where the rubber, you know, meets the road. And the legislation, the regulation is starting to pick up, right? Like across the board, they're talking about it more. They're adding more and more like, legislation that is concerning, to say the least. And so it's like, okay, maybe now's the time to come with an idea. So I wrote this like kind of just like a template idea, and I originally call it Votecoin, but then Votecoin was already taken, so I switched it to UBI coin because I thought, you know, maybe this will get some of the UBI bros on board. And it's kind of similar idea where you like create an app or website or both where people vote on pending legislation.
Yeah.
Now it's not binding or anything. It's just kind of like a poll for the residents in that district. And then the legislator, the idea would be the legislator would vote what their constituents want. And same thing like Miami coin, we're building up a fund to incentivize both legislator and voter. So when the voter's partaking in the system, they're getting a piece of the, like a dividend or however it susses out. And when the vote and when the legislator is voting with their constituency, they also get a dividend. And
so it's a financial reward mechanism.
It's financial incentive, but also with a consequence element. So like if your residents, like you're not voting with them, right, and they don't like what you're doing, they can have like a no confidence vote, just like, you know, Senator Palpatine.
Yeah, I was getting, like, literally every time someone says no confidence,
I thought of you. I'm like, I know he's gonna like this. Yeah, so they you don't get it. You don't get your whatever, your dividend payment, right?
Okay.
And so the idea is like, you don't, I mean, listen, if Miami Coin's making $30 million in 3 months, who knows how big you could build this up? And maybe it gets big enough where the incentives outweigh the incentives that a legislator would normally get, right? Which is, you know, trading influence and getting a job afterwards or whatever, you know, like all the cliches, they're all mostly true. And yes, like they just will go in there and vote with their constituency. And if they don't, they lose the money. And so it could solve a lot of issues in theory, and give us some protections. And like, I like the idea of having like benchmarks where like, if they, the more crypto friendly bills they pass, the more the that district will get, like
in rewards
districts. Yeah. In the worst state, you know, if they start, and you know, you have to start thinking like a profit loss risk reward scenario. You can't just go in there and be like, what's crypto? I gave in like an example of, you know, if someone who's not a crypto holder, and then a legislator goes, we want to fund social service X, you know, we want to build a park for kids and we're going to tax crypto holders. They'd be like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, why would they care? Of course they would. Well, now they have some sort of incentive to not do that. Now, maybe they want the park, right? Sure. Maybe they want the park and they want, okay, well then there you go. That's your democracy in action that Davis loves so much. So like, I think it kind of has something for everyone, except people who like really want to use the government to, you know, achieve their goals. Like those people probably will not be digging this idea.
But I think that most people who really want to use the government to achieve their goals are probably like Leslie Knope style people that really believe in democracy though. And this is very democratic, but it is democratic in a way that makes it clear what we all know, which is that money still has this gigantic outsized influence in politics.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And you know, people, you know, acting in their rational self-interest is totally normal. And like, even with the politicians, they're just acting in their rational self-interest. The voters are acting in their rational self-interest. So we just like need to insert a mechanism to kind of align those incentives and consequences. And like, we fucking Satoshi came up with something that we could use finally. Right.
Right.
Like a complete game changer. Somebody's just got to like pull it off.
Yeah, but so to go back to the earlier conversation, you know, the way that Ethereum exists works way better for this because you can just build so much more on top of the Ethereum layer one. Like, you couldn't even really build a voting protocol on top of Bitcoin.
No, but you could like pay out in Bitcoin if you wanted. Like, maybe that might be, I think that's what Miami Coin does. They give each resident like a little account that they can collect a little Bitcoin in. But yeah, Ethereum, right? Who cares? Whatever works. And like, this is, you know, a big piece is DeFi too. Like, not only. So when I worked at the treasurer's office here in Illinois for a few years,
yeah,
and a big problem is economies of scale for these local governments. So like, they have funds, but like, you have to pay basis points to a financial firm that will manage the money, and it's just like not really worth it. So like, we had to develop a program where all the local communities pool their money, right, to save up on the basis points. It's like, anyways, there's all these problems with this. Crypto has these solutions, right? Because it has DeFi. It has this huge decentralized network, interest-bearing accounts, right? Lending, NFT. Mike screwed up again.
Oh, sorry. So it provides people a mechanism to interact with the system, which is the wallet. And the idea of a wallet Like, you know, when people say like Web3, Web3 this, Web3 that, or whatever, to me, Web3 just means interacting with online shit via a wallet instead of your email address. Like really, if I was going to explain it to someone, that is the way I would explain it. And which is why I think so many of the Bitcoin, like Web3 is bad takes, are stupid, because it could, you know, your Bitcoin wallet could do the same thing if Bitcoin transactions were faster.
Yeah, honestly, I don't understand like all the hate on Web3. I'm not like I'm not into it that much to know either. But yeah,
that's... it's not like I'm some Web3 maven. Like what do I know? I bought some top shots and some profile pictures, right? And that's like the experience of what I know.
But this idea, kind of like this whatever UBI coin I template, is kind of the opposite. Like, so like the metaverse, like they're trying to escape reality to go into the metaverse. Like this is kind of taking the ideas of crypto and interacting with the real world somehow, which
right.
We have to have, like, even if you want to upload your consciousness to the metaverse eventually, I don't know what the end goal here is.
I mean, we already live in the metaverse, right? Like that's the secret to all of this. I've never met you. We probably never will meet. I'll probably never go to Chicago and go get dinner with you. Like maybe, I don't know, we could, right? But it probably won't. But
yeah,
we know each other. Like I have a mental, like my brain has a process. Like, oh, I know who Brian Hooper is. I know what he looks like. I know what his voice sounds like. And people just don't really process things that way. But like, we already live in a metaverse.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I think all that stuff's awesome and amazing, right? Like compared to the 90s, like you couldn't do any of this stuff. You had like no shot to have a career like you have right now, Davis, or me.
Oh, yeah.
Like none of this stuff would have ever happened. And this is why I'm, you know, another reason why I'm interested in this stuff is like, I want to stop them from fucking it up, right? That's sure. Kind of like, if you really want a libertarian principle, that's what it is. The trade-offs are never worth it. Like they will screw this up because they don't know anything about it. Like, who was the guy who was holding up the crypto revision, right? The guy was like 90 years old.
Yeah.
Billionaire, has no idea.
I mean, even like Facebook, like rebranding as like Meta or whatever. Like, I tend to be, I mean, I honestly, if you told me I could eliminate the undue influence of the United States federal government or of like Google and Facebook, I'd probably choose the government. I'd probably say I'd rather the government make calls for me than Google or Facebook.
I'd probably say Google or Facebook because they still do have, I mean, like if you did like a test where you call your local unemployment office and test the customer service or call.
Oh, Amazon, sure. Yeah.
They're going to treat you a hell of a lot better at Amazon.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there is no consequences, right? This is like the kind of the thesis behind my article. Right. There's no consequences for any of these people. There's no too little consequences. Yeah. You can vote them out. Like, great. Good job. Like, they're like, oh, okay. Well, now I got a job here. So like one of my bosses, when I was working for the governor, her beat, like you have like different departments you kind of work under, was the insurance department. And then when the governor lost, she got a job before the term was up as like the head of the Midwest Insurance Companies Association. Like before, like in a blink of an eye, you know, right? Because what happens is when there's a change, especially from Democrat to Republican like ours, they just fire everybody. Like everyone
gets
fired, which is like a great way to run a stable system, right? Just firing people every 4 years. So like how do you think, how do you think they're going to act towards the insurance companies when they work there? Right? The incentives are all completely fucked up. So like that's the bureaucracy part. I don't know about that. I would just say like it'll have like a trickle down effect if we can get the actual legislators to vote with the constituency, right? And have some sort of consequence where they're like, okay, I can't vote for this whatever arms bill because like my constituency doesn't want it. And if I vote for it, I lose $5,000 a month, right, for the rest of my life or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So like the I don't see any other way. I haven't seen any like proposal that interacts with the real world. I mean, have you?
I mean, the well, So I guess the big thing with all of this discussion is that hoping to implement these things, even on like a citywide scale, much less a statewide or a nationwide scale, becomes much more difficult than implementing them in like smaller communities, like your HOA or whatever. Like you could use the quadratic voting that we talked about the last time from Radical Markets. Like that's a much smaller way to introduce it, you know? And I think a governance token would work the same way. Like, and governance tokens work better on online communities when it's not an actual an organized, what is even the right word for like a government? I mean, it is just a government, but it's confusing to say governance and government right back. But like, I guess like a private versus a public entity, because then you're opting into membership for those things, as opposed to like when you live in a city, you're not opting in, you just are subject to the government where you live.
Yeah, certainly. I do think you can. I suggest in the article, definitely start local. It's much easier to win those seats and stuff like that. But like, think of it this too, Davis. Like, let's say we started it today, right? We have this fund just continuously building up funds. Eventually, there's going to be a breaking point where someone's going to like be like, They have $500 million in that fund, and it's getting you know, 12% interest every year. Like, why don't I just go run for my local seat? You know, like it's gonna incentivize crypto friendly people just by existing.
Like, because the money will come. I mean, that's the only reason. I mean, money is the only reason why crypto is even becoming a thing that Congress and people even care about, is because so much money has moved into the space. You know, if Bitcoin was still $8,000 and Ethereum was $75, like no one would care. They just wouldn't care.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. And so we're lucky that we're also lucky in that now there's a lot of money in this. Like now you could probably, so like in Illinois, I know like the salaries for like a rep, it's not that much. It's like 45,000 and a senator's like 65. I haven't worked there in a while, so it might be more than that. But it's not a ton of money. And the way, here's another thing where it's tough for people that don't understand like how the influence and power works, is like you get more money by getting on the better committees. So like if you get on the higher up committees, like you get bonuses. And so like you can get into the 80 or 90,000, but who assigns those committees, right? It's the Senate president and it's the speaker. So like you kind of have to play ball. I knew, I had a meeting, you remember Napoleon Harris?
No.
Football player, the linebacker for the played for Northwestern and the Raiders. You don't remember Napoleon Harris?
It's before my time, bud.
Too young. Anyways, he was a senator in Illinois, and I was having a meeting with him, and he didn't know I knew the Senate president. And he got a call, and like he had to go to a meeting, and he hung up the phone. He's like, this motherfucker's calling me and thinks I can go there. He's talking shit about him. And I'm like, oh well. You don't know that. I know that guy.
Right. Yeah.
There's nothing you could do. You kind of have to play ball. Right. But if you're getting paid, if you have like a lifetime source of money, like you could be like, no, I'm not coming to your meeting. I'm not going to sign off.
Yeah. I don't care what you have to offer me, because like I'm already taken care of.
It changes everything. And then, you know, I wrote briefly on this too, is like, if you can get this fund big enough, where it is like a UBI type of situation, like it lessens the burden on the government, right? Because you're not going to qualify for a lot of benefits because you're already getting money, right? You know, it depends on how much eventually it gets to, but like it could shrink the size of government. Like people could be like, you know, we don't need this anymore because everyone has this.
So, right? So in this world, how can this token be traded by people that don't live in the community?
Yeah, I mean, that's, so this is all like, once the template's out there,
it becomes very theoretical.
And I'm like, if someone's like, hey, I'm gonna do this and I want to do it this way, I'd be like, whatever they said, I'd be like, oh, good idea. Yeah, I like that. Like, right. trade the tokens, don't trade the tokens. Like, I don't care, because I think by default, inherently, it's going to get every, you know, it's going to get what I want. It's inherently going to have crypto friendly people going for it. It's inherently going to want people to vote for crypto protections to protect their assets that they're now getting for free. So like, I feel like there's nothing they can do that I wouldn't like. But I was thinking like with the tokens, you could like the more tokens you have, like maybe you have a little more voting. So like you can vote for that no confidence vote. Like you have a little bit more there, or if there's changes to the code, right, then everyone has to agree on it. Maybe the people who use it more have it, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the much easier way for this to work actually is not token native, is just very Web 2, which is that, and I think we talked about this the last time you were on the show, but just someone runs, you know, they're a junior senator from Arkansas or whatever, and they say, okay, there's an app, you know, that you can download when you vote for me, and every vote that I do on the floor will be, you guys will vote on it, and I will just vote with whatever it says. So if it's 51-49 in favor, I'll vote in favor. If it's you know, 40-60 to the negative, I will vote with the 60% in the negative. And I feel like that would be very popular, but at least once, at least one person could do this and win an election, I think.
Yeah, even leaving out the crypto stuff, I think just that platform, someone could run for like a state senator seat or a House rep seat. I mean, that's just like the simplest campaign ever, right? Like, I'm just going to literally vote what they tell me. Like,
whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do. Yeah.
And so like, they'll like when you run for office, the first thing you get is you get a bunch of forms sent to you from like unions and all sorts of associations and stuff. And they ask you like, how are you going to vote on this issue, this issue, this issue? Like you have the answer for all of that. You're like, I am just going to literally vote for what my constituents say. Like Davis, what's your opinion on nuclear energy? It's like, it's I don't have nuclear energy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter because I'm just going to vote for what my constituents want. It doesn't matter how complex or simple the issue is. You're just the guy going in there pushing a button.
Which is, I don't know. I mean, do you think people like that? Or I mean, probably just in general, they don't care and they would rather not think about it.
I mean, I don't know. And like, you could be, pessimistic and go, do we really want everyone direct democracy? Right.
Like, I don't. Right. I mean, I think I've learned a lot about what people think and how they understand the world, you know, over the last 5 years or so. And I mean, that's not a popular opinion. That's going to get me canceled.
No, I agree with it too. I mean, I think didn't we talk about this before?
Which is, by the way, an idea that, that some of the crazy Bitcoiners have. They're like, we should just have kings.
Yeah. The monarchists. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. This is what we definitely talked about that on the last show. Yeah, because a monarchist is basically like a CEO, but and their time preference is
different. Yeah, that's my opinion that has gotten the most pushback whenever I've said it to someone, is that benevolent dictators, you know, it probably in a lot of cases leads to like a high functioning society.
Yeah, of course, and we've had plenty of them, you know, throughout history, Charlemagne and stuff like that. Whenever you put benevolent in front of something, though, it kind of like, of course, it's going to be good because it's benevolent.
Yeah, but who? I mean, I promise you, if I was a king, I wouldn't end up being that benevolent, probably.
Well, no, of course not. I would rule with an iron fist. But like, in reality, too, like we're really relying on benevolence, too, in the current system, because like I said, there's no consequences. Right.
Yeah. So
still relying on them being benevolent to get to like your end goals. But yeah, and in the philosophy class, Davis, I am with you. Like, I don't think because 6 out of 10 people say I have to pay the dinner bill makes it moral, right? Or you know, it's just because 6 out of 10 people say Davis shouldn't smoke pot because they don't like it doesn't make it right. Moral. You know what I'm saying? So I don't like it, but now we have to go out of the classroom into the real world, and that's what's out there. So how do we have to interact with it? And so like, I kind of think of this as like a Trojan horse. It's like using democracy as a Trojan horse against them to leave us alone.
Who are we Trojan horsing? The government?
The app, the UBI app, and the whole system behind it is the Trojan horse. The Trojan horse idea is basically the app, and the whole process is the Trojan horse, and democracy is kind of like, you know, the gate or whatever. We're going to use democracy and people's love for, you know, to be, they've been trained right since first grade. that this is the process. You know, direct democracy is the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, it's like, okay, I don't think we should do some of these wars, right? It's like, well, you don't want to bring democracy to them, right? It's like, so you're just using that kind of training against them to leave us alone.
I don't really care about bringing democracy though. Like, I don't know. I don't, well, could I, if it was up to me, would I allow would could I put democracy in all these places? But it's like much more important for me for like, you know, school teachers to be paid more and for all the roads in my community to not have giant potholes in them. So that's actually a huge trade-off, and it, which has gotten all fucked up in American politics, which is like the right should theoretically be the anti-war party and the left should be the pro-war party. I mean, in reality, both sides are the pro-war party.
Yeah.
Because of the military industrial complex. But Republican politicians, if you really actually want small government, you should be like, well, we're never going to war. We will go to war if we are attacked, and that's it.
That's, I agree 100%. And that is how the Republican Party used to be a long time ago, before like the Bush neocon, like 90s.
Like how long ago?
Oh, I mean, you could even say Reagan.
Didn't Reagan do, I don't know shit about Ronald Reagan, but didn't he do like a crazy amount of defense spending?
Defense spending is not a foreign war though, is it, right?
Defense spending is the same thing. Defense spending is the same shit.
I would say like, if you're the one getting bombed and your family getting killed in the other country, you'd probably be like, no, it's not the same thing.
but what does America need to have defense spending for?
Well, I'm not arguing for defense spending. I'm just saying that I agree. Like, you could probably the Coast Guard could probably defend us from the Somali pirates, right? Like, I agree with you. I'm just saying though, like that they are two different things. Definitely defense spending and going and invading another country. But like when I said, like,
it all goes to the same crooked ass contractors, though.
Exactly. Yes, this is. I am 100% on board here. Yeah, this is what I'm hoping. Like, maybe we could, you know, chip away at a little bit with this idea or something like this. Maybe somebody comes up with something better, is exactly these problems. Now the federal level stuff, that's even bigger, you know, right? This is that's like a whole, who knows how much it would take to get the incentives aligned on that. Right. Like,
I mean, it just, it's probably not even worth discuss. Like, it's just probably impossible.
But it's like, if you can get 31 senators in state X, and then they're like, no, we're not allowing any crypto regulation here. Like, you guys, just like marijuana is legal, the crypto is legal here. We don't care what your federal laws are, right? And then it's like, okay, we got a whole state now, right? Maybe we can get two, maybe we can get three of them, right? And you're just paying people to leave you alone.
Yeah. So that is one of the things that has become interesting to me. And if we're going to rag on the Bitcoin boys even more, like the Bitcoin people like championing Ted Cruz, right? Cause he was like, it's like, are you guys even aware of like who you are and like what you're doing? Like that would be like if, I don't know who's like the worst, like if Ben Shapiro came out and was like, I love Bitcoin. Bitcoin's amazing. You should, like, it's like, I'm not going to start saying nice shit about Ben Shapiro just because he is touting Bitcoin. It's like, have some fucking morals, have a backbone. Like, what are we doing here championing Ted Cruz because one of his, you know, interns happened to buy Bitcoin when it was worth $4 and wrote up a nice speech for him? It's like such a joke. It makes me feel crazy because Bitcoin was supposed to be a way of opting out of the bullshit, right? Bitcoin was supposed to be a way to not have these games where all the incentives are aligned to have people lie all the time. And it's just turned into everyone's lying all the time still. People are just, you know, your bedfellows are, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans leave the debate floor or whatever, where they were just arguing over bill, and then they all go to dinner together and they laugh at the people who think that it's taking it seriously. And that's what the Bitcoin people are now. The Bitcoin people are the people who don't care as long as they win.
I agree 100%. Here's an even better example. Have you watched Mayor Suarez's stuff yet?
Is he the Miami mayor? No, I'm like not engaging with Bitcoin stuff these days because it just bums me out.
All right, so I've watched like one interview with him, and I'm like, I don't even know if he's a Democrat or a Republican. I'm assuming in Miami he's probably a Democrat.
I assume a Democrat, but
yeah, but yeah, I mean, but you are aware that he is a Bitcoin bro, right?
Like, yes, yeah,
wants everyone to move, go to Miami and do crypto there. When this is like the whole thesis here is like, what incentives and consequences does he have for you, right? Like, right now he's being rewarded through all this, you know,
social crypto, media attention social and media, votes. And
yeah. And like, oh, I can get these people here. But you know, who knows? He's clearly, he wants to run for higher office too. So like, okay, you're going to be in Miami and then he's gone. And then someone else comes in who hates crypto. Now where are you? Right. Like we need a new way to interact and change the incentive consequence structure. Is the only thing I can think of anyways.
And I mean, you know, this Suarez guy, whatever, but like the guy Mukiele, that's not his name, the president of El Salvador.
Oh,
I mean,
right.
He's just a straight up like bad guy. He just is like he is a non-benevolent dictator. He is trying to dismantle the democratic structure of El Salvador. And we're cheering him on the sideline because he owns like 85 Bitcoins. Like what? Like, this is like my friend Alex Gladstein, who came on the show, you know, he made this point. Like, he's been on what Twitter Spaces or whatever with this guy. And he's like, you know, I don't want to minimize the human rights stuff going on there. And it's like completely terrible. All of this stuff that's going on in El Salvador. He's like trying to ruin the power of the parliament and take things over to himself. And we have this whole community that's supposed to be for like free enterprise and human rights. Like, right, that's a huge thing in Bitcoin now. It's like the intersection of Bitcoin and human rights. And we have this guy who's like straight up a human rights violator being championed because he owns some Bitcoins.
Yeah, it is a strange thing to see. Like, I don't know how are you supposed to handle that? Right.
I mean, like, it's fun. Certainly if you would have told me 5 years ago that in any country on earth, doesn't matter if it's a fake country, like, the fake country that, FC Sheriff plays, no one even knows what that is. It's a soccer team, but there's like a fake country in Europe that has a team in the Champions League, but it's like a country that's not recognized by the UN. It's like a mafia state. It's very interesting if you Google it. Wow. But like, if you would have told me that any country would be using Bitcoin as like its national, like have a national reserve of it, I'd have been like, not a fucking chance. So it's cool, but we don't need to fall head over heels for ourselves for this guy who is not a good guy.
You know, do you remember when Chile used to be under Pinochet was a dictatorship too, and like a pretty brutal one?
Yeah.
And he had like sent some of his advisors to the University of Chicago to like study under Milton Friedman and stuff like that. And they shit on like the University of Chicago and Milton Friedman for allowing it, right? Like, you're helping this dictator. What are you doing? I think I have this story right. But anyways, eventually, like, those guys went back and like were like, you know, actually, if we open up some of these markets, we'll do even better.
Yeah.
Right. And then eventually it snowballed to the Chile you have now, which is, you know, pretty, I think it's the wealthiest nation in South America. And so, like, you know, if this is leading El Salvador to some sort, you know, more freedom, to more prosperity too, like, you know, maybe we give a, you don't give them a pass, obviously. You don't have to cheerlead, like you're saying too, but like, you could be like, okay, hopefully this helps those people.
Right. And hopefully it does. Right. I hope it works out. And I hope that they are, you know, protected from something that happens in lots of South American countries, which is really bad inflation that, like, you know, ruins your life savings. Like, I hope all of that works out, but I don't, the same way I don't need, you know, Pierre Richard telling me that Ted Cruz is the one politician who really gets Bitcoin. I also don't need him telling me that we should look to El Salvador as what a nation should be doing for its people, because there's a lot more involved in governance than, like, and people don't see, this is a very non-libertarian viewpoint, which is that there's a lot more that a government does for its people than just not keeping their money from inflating.
Yeah, they throw them in cages. They take their money.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm with you on some of that stuff, and some libertarian viewpoints. I'm like, yep, totally on board. You know, the state shouldn't have the right to kill people. And then on other things, I'm like, do you even fucking like healthcare? Right? Like, I bet you're like, I bet you are. You know, state sponsored healthcare is like a death sentence, right? I bet you're 0% on board.
Well, no, I mean, I think the liberal argument of I'd rather spend the money on grandma's hip surgery than bombs, right? I think makes a lot of sense.
Yes, correct.
I think that for the same reasons that they're going to fuck up crypto, that the gambling regulation sucks is because they don't know anything about it. Their incentives and consequences aren't aligned up in a way to make it.
But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that trade-off. Like someone said this to me on Twitter the other day. They're like, oh, Davis, you wanted to vote for Liz Warren. She's like the worst, most anti-crypto person ever. And I'm like, well, I'm not fucking dense enough to think that crypto is the most important thing in our country right now. Like there are a lot more important things going on than, you know, whether or not Ethereum is a security or not.
We had a hotel in Springfield that the state owned. And like the idea was we have so many people traveling to and from Chicago to Springfield and from out of state and stuff that it makes more sense to just actually own the hotel. And it was ran so poorly that it was losing so much money. They had to sell it. It had cockroaches everywhere, right? None of the laundry was getting done. The state, since there's no profit and loss feedback mechanism, this is in Mises' article, The Socialist Calculation Problem. I think we talked about this before too, that it's almost impossible for them to run something in any semblance of efficient manner.
But isn't the argument that
they can't run a hotel, Davis?
Wouldn't the argument be that it doesn't have to be structured that way, and those things like they could just be run via government subsidy, and that would be way easier?
Yeah, right. Which is what they do, right? They outsource all these services, like basically almost everything they do is outsourced, and it's.
But that's good, right?
Well, it's better. It's better than having just a pure government monopoly on it, but it's still not great.
Yeah, but I mean, I think also part of like growing up and understanding politics is understanding that for a nation of 400 million people, there's literally probably no great solutions for almost anything.
No, for sure. And honestly, I said on the last podcast we did that, like, I think secession is really a viable option with the, you know, the polarization of the country is like, just let them go. Just let them have their own state.
Yeah, but it doesn't work out geographically because the places of the country that are most aligned are 4,000 miles away from each other.
Well, it depends though, how it shakes out. Who knows? Because if the more and more and smaller it gets, you might only have to move like 5 miles, right? You might not have to move.
Well, I'm saying like California and New York and like Massachusetts and those places.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Why can't California be its own thing?
I mean, it should be. It kind of is already.
Yeah, well, but their legislators affect your life, you know, like where it doesn't have to be that way, where they can just do their own thing.
I mean, yeah, but that is, again, that's philosophy class. I mean, that is.
Yes. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I bet secession comes on the table in 2024.
What part of Texas?
You never know. It's a long ways away, but you could easily see like the Washington state.
But that's not even a popular right wing talking point right now.
It's getting there.
Don't one of the skinhead groups, don't they really? Someone told me this, that one of the skinhead groups is actually big on secession.
Well, of course they are, because they want an ethno state. It's the whole premise.
I don't know. I can't keep all the names straight of all the racist groups, but so I do know that is true that. And if it's popular now among some of the skinheads, then Ted Cruz will be mentioning it at a conference eventually.
Well, I mean, there's also, I think it's already on the table in Washington. Like like 12 counties are trying to peel off from Washington and become part of Idaho. I might be mixing that up.
Sure.
That was a while ago. I haven't looked in. I wonder what happened to it. But they, like, you know, Sam Harris says, you know, if you have an argument, you either have, you could either use words or violence, right? Like you can either come to some sort of understanding or
isn't
you fight.
Sam Harris a piece of shit though? I
used to love Sam Harris, and then he kind of got crazy after Trump got elected, and he's like has some like anti-free speech like tweets and stuff. It's like, Sam, what happened to you, man?
Wait, I don't know anything about him other than like people mocking him on Twitter. What is Sam Harris's deal?
He's a neuroscientist and podcaster, and he was kind of got his feet wet with the atheism movement.
Okay.
So he's big in like free will, you know, he was a philosophy major and then a neuroscientist.
Is that like when kids go to college and read Richard Dawkins for the first time, they think they've like discovered the secret to living? Is that kind of like his deal?
Richard Dawkins are tight.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. I remember when I was 13 and read Richard Dawkins for the first time.
You might not want to be so dismissive of him. His book, Lying.
My thing is to dismiss all people whose deal is like, I'm a thinker and that's what I do. I mostly dismiss all of those people who don't.
So you prefer non-thinkers?
No, I prefer people who have jobs and who are forced to problem solve in their daily life.
Sure. But he does. Davis, I know you're into meditation. He has a meditation app that I've done. Headspace and his, I like his better.
Yeah.
So waking up.
I should not be, you are right. I should not be so quick to dismiss, but I mean, because so many of the people who are like, oh, my job is to be like a free thinker is like, right. those people are shitty, like 90% of the time. And I mean, the vibe I get from all, you know, like, Glenn Greenwald is the one that people like. It's like that guy just knows how to keep the money coming in, because if he just takes the most popular anti-consensus narrative, which like it sounds like an oxymoron but it's not, and if he just really bigs up that, his Substack dollars are going to keep coming.
Yeah, I kind of like him now.
No, I know, I bet you do, because I bet he's on the forefront of like, oh, actually the government's lying to you about this and they're lying to you about this, and I'm a free thinker and I'm the only one who will report on this.
But I mean, these are ad hominems, really, you know, right? So like,
oh yes, I'm not speaking in any specific experience about any of these people. I am just talking shit.
Like, well, it's glad to see that you know exactly what you're doing here. Yeah, because like if he said 2 + 2 = 4, you can't go, yeah, well, you're one of those free thinker guys, right? So like, his argument is like, you know, in an argument, you can either work things out verbally or you fight.
If anyone was saying shit that I agreed with, I'd be like, dude, what a thinker, you know?
I love these thinking guys. I take in all their content.
Yeah, the problem with people of like my political affiliation is they're all so depressed and so angry that no one's even creating a good thought argument. It's just like, I'd rather like, and they just like, they're all doing like comedy podcasts instead, because it's too depressing to be a leftist who hates the Republicans and hates the leadership of the Democratic. It's just like too depressing, and you feel like nothing will ever get done, so there's no point in trying to be productive.
Yeah, that was most of my adult life of. Right in that was my wheelhouse. I would like go to Halloween parties dressed up as like making fun of Republicans and stuff. Like it was pretty bad.
I mean, I read off my book, but I read Rush Limbaugh's a big fat. I read Rush Limbaugh's a big fat idiot or whatever when I was really young. And like, I don't know. I mean, Rush Limbaugh is a big fat. He's dead now, I think.
Did Al Franken did that piss you off when they canceled him?
No. No, anyone who has made women feel sexually uncomfortable at work should be canceled. Like that is to me if I'm gonna say all these things, these mean things about the Democrats, I can at least give them that when one of their own deserves to be canceled, at least they actually do it and don't try to keep them around.
Well, not always, but the Al Franken thing is like, you know, like the argument there from the liberals is like, that was kind of just like a Republican tactic to get him out of office. And
no, but it's not though. Like people
he wasn't
should be
doing anything at work, right? He was on a comedy tour and
it doesn't matter to me. It's hard enough to be a woman in the professional or personal space. Like it's everything is set up to make women feel uncomfortable anyway. So anyone who is on that side should.
I'm definitely not going to defend any of this stuff. So I feel like already I've said too much, but I think you need to refresh your memory on the Al Franken incident. Maybe you don't.
I know very few of the specifics. I just know.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I am always inclined to believe the side of the woman in those events. And I think Franken, if I remember, maybe this is not, but I think he was like, yeah, this did happen.
He took a pic. The woman who was on Home Improvement, his like attractive assistant.
Yeah.
They were on a USO tour in Afghanistan. They were on like a bomber plane or whatever, transporting, and she fell asleep and she was in a full metal jacket and everything. And he made a joke picture like this where he was like grabbing her breasts, but sure. He didn't actually grab them. And he was like this, you know, just a stupid old man joke that he
can't be done, dude. I wouldn't want someone grabbing my dick while I was asleep. Like I don't,
Yeah, but he didn't actually grab it. But no, listen, I'm not condoning his, but you gotta admit,
there are shades of gray. There's a big difference between that and you know, whatever Bill Clinton did to
I don't even like Al Franken, and I'm not a Democrat anymore, and I wanted the whole thing gone. I'm just saying that I'm remembering.
Well, hey,
that.
you're fair and balanced, bud.
I mean, I don't hate Republicans anymore. I used to.
I mean, in what way?
I went on a date with this girl, and towards the end, she like came out as like a hardcore Republican, and I was like,
the reason why I would find that more distasteful is I actually think it's more diluted to be a hardcore Republican than it is to be a hardcore Democrat. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think anyone who wakes up in the morning is like, Nancy Pelosi is fucking kicking ass. Like, I think that's extremely delusional. And I think it's extremely delusional to think like, oh, the Democrats are the party of the people and the Republicans aren't. But I think it's an even deeper delusion to be into being a Republican, because it's a party now without even a fake ideology to sell you. There's not even, you're not even being sold. All you're being sold is Christianity and patriotism.
I don't think so. I think that those times are over. I think Trump broke that party.
Yeah. I mean, the patriotism thing is still a big part of it, but you're right.
Yeah, that definitely does seem a big part of it. But like the kind of like Dan Crenshaw, new wave, like I don't think they're going to win out.
The born again stuff?
Yeah. Well, Dan, like he's definitely patriotism. More classical, like a Republican.
But that's always the argument: is libs hate America, and they should leave if they don't like it. And Republicans just love this country, and it's the best country on earth, right?
I mean, yeah, that's some sort of simple argument people make. Yeah,
not one I buy into, but that's the way it's presented.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. I guess I mean I don't know. I can't speak for Republicans as I'm not one, you know. So like, I think there's a disparate point of view. Like they still, I mean, there is a couple Liberty Bros there. There used to be some Liberty Bros on the left too. Those guys aren't really around either. Do you like Jimmy Dore?
I don't even know who that is.
You don't watch Jimmy Dore? Yeah, you probably like him. He might be a little too much for you. But yeah, he's kind of
too what for me?
A little too Glenn Greenwald.
I mean, look. I certainly could open my mind more. I mean, a comedy talk show from a leftist perspective, I would probably be into.
He is a comedian, but it's a news show. Okay. He does have some good bits. He's just a pissed off liberal, right? And he hates the elites. He hates the established Democrats. He wants universal health care as his main issue.
I'm on board.
You might enjoy it. Who can you name two good leftists? Who are two good leftists?
I mean, you're going to be like, you're so full of shit, but like in terms of like a high profile leftist who most things they say, I agree with AOC. Like sure. If I was to pick a popular politician that people could pick out of a lineup, I'd be like maybe 75% of the stuff she says I'm on board with. But then, you know, AOC, she's one of the people that's like, NFTs are killing the earth, right?
Yeah.
because she doesn't get it. So it's like, that's, it's a very, which is why people say stuff like, oh, you can't really be a liberal and be a Bitcoin bro. Like I people say that to me all the time. And it's like, I don't know. It's like, I am not comfortable identifying as like a Democrat anymore, I guess, but still would consider myself a leftist, which, and partly is because of all the crypto stuff.
I mean, that you did, you beat me to it too. I was going to go, okay. And then are they good on crypto? And the, you know, the answer is going to be no.
Because that's the party line. That is the, it's not because if they really sat down and interacted with it and thought about what private money could mean for the relationship between people and the government, if they really thought about it, they'd actually realize that's a super leftist idea that, that, you know, the people could be protected from the government in that way.
I don't think so. I think quite the opposite, because if they sit down, they go, well, we have this Fed money we could print and get all these social services and help, because they think the government helps people, right? You can't do that with crypto.
But you can. The thing is I'm not speaking about a world that runs on Bitcoin where you're buying your Starbucks on the Lightning Network or whatever. I'm talking about these things existing in concert where private and public money. I mean, why should their own? I mean, there are millions of different types of money and currency that exist in the world. It feels untrue to me that both shouldn't exist inside of one country.
I mean, I'm talking like from a power perspective. Like, yeah. If I have the access to the Fed, then that's a powerful tool I could use politically.
Yes. Right?
And if I no longer have access to the Fed, or if crypto does take over, I can no longer use that tool. And like, if I believe that I'm inherent, I'm working, using government to do good, then no, I don't want that. I want to keep the status quo, and then I will print money and then have the Build Back Better plan or whatever. Right. So I don't know. I think that if they sat down and think about it, I think they might already have.
I'm sure
I can't even Chuck Schumer or whatever. I'm sure they've all sat down and thought about it.
I mean, where are these attacks coming from, right? They're definitely starting to get ramped up, right? You're seeing that Bitcoin's racist, Bitcoin's sexist, Bitcoin has a bro problem.
Bitcoin does have a bro problem, but it's not a problem of the coin. It's a problem of the people who like it.
I mean, anyone can buy crypto. We know this, right?
Like, yes,
anyone
sure.
can get the barrier to entry is nothing. And like, anyone can do it. So like, just because men disproportionately use it more or like it more, I mean, whatever, that's just the way it shaked out. But either way, they're manufacturing consent, right? They're doing the Chomsky maneuver, right? Where they're building this narrative to like, eventually when they come crashing down, they've already laid the woodwork in the press and had people go, oh wait, Bitcoin, right? Yeah, the global warming thing that's ruining the racist yeah. thing, the sexist thing. Yeah, yeah, okay, whatever, pass the bill. Yeah, no, we don't want that. That sounded bad because I read it in the Washington Post 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, okay, well then who's like, because there's probably groups of people behind this.
Yes.
And like they put it in that bill, right? The KYC miner stuff. Like, the,
yep.
did you really need the $20 billion from Bitcoin to balance the budget? Did you really, that's the only source you could have got it from after you printed $7 trillion? Like, you know, like, we got to put this, like, so like, they're planting the seeds at the least, right?
Yeah, no, they are. And you know, I don't know. I think one of the things that might happen that they are not prepared for is it might be like too big. It might, like, the DeFi ecosystem in Bitcoin might be too big and too powerful to just snap your fingers and disappear. Like, they might've waited too long because they don't know anything about it.
I you've made this argument for me a bunch of times, and it's definitely a good one, but like, I'm just saying, like, they could still mess it up, right? And won't go away.
Oh, big time.
Right. So like I said, instead of 8% interest, you're going to get 2%, right? Because then they're going to regulate the shit out of it. And then Chase is going to get their hands in it. You know, just stupid stuff like that. Yeah. You can have your NFTs, but now there's going to be like a big tax on it.
Well, if I want to be a Bitcoin bro, I could say like, oh, it's still good for Bitcoin because more people are going to own it, and banks will own it, and the Fed will own it, and that is good for the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a breaking point, though, wouldn't you think? It's like, right? Like eventually, like they're locked in their homes and like they can't go anywhere. And it's like, yeah, but I have my Bitcoin. It's like, well, don't you have to interact with the real world eventually?
No, I think some of these people are fine. Just being like, I have two Bitcoins, they're worth $2 billion and I don't care.
Right. Well, you know, God bless you, I guess. I mean, I do hope though that people listening, if they've made it this far, that maybe somebody out there can take like this template idea and do something with it. And like, I'm happy to talk to anyone about it, or, you know, there's definitely obviously criticisms you can make on the idea too. So I'm happy.
Why doesn't a DAO just buy America? Right. You know, some Ethereum bro has been like workshopping this tweet.
There's got to be you called it already, right? That something's going to happen. We don't know what it is yet. It'll probably be the dumbest thing you could think of.
Right? Like, yeah.
Something like, I don't know. I can't, like, what would be the dumbest thing you could think of? Whatever that is, that's what the DAO is going to buy.
Yeah.
And then it's going to fail. And
the
then
DAO really, is going to buy like Augusta or something.
Oh, that would be, yeah, that'd be interesting.
I mean, how much would Augusta even sell? Like, how much money would have to be offered? I don't even know who owns it.
That's a good question. How much, how do you even price that? Do the members own it, maybe?
I was going to say probably they do, but would $50 billion be enough to buy Augusta?
Those guys, they don't need money, right? Those members.
But they always want more.
They want a golf course, though.
Yeah, they do want an they want their own private, that's true.
Special golf course. Like, I don't know if you could even give them enough money to get them to give it away. They're just all so rich.
Yeah, no, that's true. All right. I mean, we got anything else we want to discuss?
No, just make sure we get that Omer Yurt 7 guy in there. I think
we're Omer Yurt 7 is in. I mean, we mostly just spun in circles. I'm not gonna read Glenn Greenwald. I don't know. You have definitely like bit pilled me a little bit. Like, I am certainly less enthusiastic about the Democratic Party than I was 2 years ago. But I mean, also part of that has been COVID and the money printing and the ways in which the government has failed its people during all of this. But not in the way, definitely different in the ways than you would have said that it failed, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, I think our perspectives are probably closer than you think. But like, for me, once it's that whole, the whole red pill analogy, once you see it, then you can't unsee it. So like, I know like that they suck on gambling, because I'm an expert in it. Like, yeah. What else do they suck on? Well, turns out it's almost everything.
Yeah. Right.
And the incentives and consequences are not aligned. Right. And
this, yes.
And that's not something you can really change.
Yeah. I mean, it so much of life, you know, does really come down to like game theory and stuff. And that is something that once you see it, you can't unsee it. That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, if crypto's not going to help, then what will, right? Like, I really do hope someone like takes a crack at something. Hopefully this is what we're crypto bros. Like, hopefully this is some sort of new direction.
I mean, I would love for that to be true. I would love for crypto to be the impetus or at least the layer mechanism for a change in governance. That would be very cool. I would sign me up for that for sure.
Yeah. And if people could make money.
Yeah. There you go. That's all they got to do.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll let you get out of here. Tell people about Lowell's and about where they can go read this Citicoin proposal.
Lowell's Wednesdays, 8 Eastern. Me, Pete Overzet, on both of our channels. We live stream. Brick75, BRIC75.com is my website. And I put up like prop bets and ownership projections and stuff like that. I have a sportsbook HUD app. I'm like still developing. It's brutal, Davis. Do not ever work with like coders, man. It takes forever. I'm going to show it to you when it's done, though. I think you have sportsbook access, right?
No, I live in Missouri. We'll probably be the last state to get it.
Oh my God. That sucks. Well, maybe it won't be useful.
I mean, I could drive 30 minutes to Illinois and I'd get it.
Well, anyways, that's on my site, brick75.com. I think that's all I got.
Yeah. All right, there we go. Brick75, yep. Everyone. We'll be back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.